So we didn't record last week because David was on an adventure.
I was.
David, tell us about your adventure.
We went to Yellowstone for 4 or 5 days, and it was...
Did you drive there, by the way? I never asked. Did you drive?
No, I don't... No way. I don't like being in a car.
But when you get to Yellowstone, you do need a car. Did you use the tourist buses?
Yeah, so we went with Kelly and her dad and stepmom. And so we flew into Bozeman, and then we rented a car. And the first 2 days of going through Yellowstone, we had a guided, like a private guided tour. So,
oh, that must be fun. Wow.
Yeah, so a person comes and picks you up and then takes you to the park, which was just this particular person, she was... I don't know how she retained so much knowledge, but she was absolutely fantastic. So, like, day one was going through and looking at geography and geology of, like, hot springs and geysers and why there's just boiling water shooting out of the ground everywhere, which is just phenomenal. And then day two is all about wildlife, like looking for wolves, and there's bison everywhere, so you don't have to look for them. They're just in your way, and other creatures, bears, and it's like a photographer's dream. It was so beautiful, and the weather was absolutely perfect. It would be a little cold in the morning, or depending on where you're at in the mountains, it'd be like 35 degrees, and then by the afternoon it was 70 some degrees, just stunning.
And were you staying at the campsite hotels? I know there's a few inside the park.
No, we stayed outside the park. We had an Airbnb of this house that was built on top of a mountain. Like, it just, like, it was stunning views. Like, the, basically, like, when you get off the highway, it's like a 20-minute, it's technically a road, but it's more like a driveway because it's all paved, or it's not paved. It's like a 20-minute long driveway to get up the mountain and get to the cabin. So, going into town, or leaving, is like you don't want to leave the house more than once a day because it's such a chore to drive up and down these mountains. And this was the first vacation that I ever can recall where I did not take my main photography camera. I only took my iPhone and then a little pocket film camera, and I haven't developed a film yet, but I think, my iPhone photography is phone photography for scenic while outdoors is perfect because phones love lots of light. You got great wide angle lenses. So I knew I'd be okay there. And it was just absolutely phenomenal. So it was, I have found, like, in the past, like when we went to Alaska, it felt like it was a photography trip. I'm going to take all my cameras and or my camera and all my lenses. And I would find myself so involved in trying to find the right photos all the time that I really didn't enjoy the actual scenery. And so I'm like, I'm not going to take a bunch of heavy equipment. I'm just going to bring my phone and a little pocket film camera. And I think I really took everything in. It was fun.
Awesome. Good. That's great. Yeah, that's good. I've noticed I'm not a photographer, but I do like, I see images that I think, like, oh, that's worth capturing, you know, for me. But I've noticed that, like, I think the difference between a photographer is that you have this eye where you're constantly aware of how the light and how the motion and how the color and everything is interacting at all these different times. And, like, when you see it, you see it. Mm-hmm. And if you go looking for it, then you're, like, hyper attuned. My brother and my sister-in-law have done photography. And it's funny, like, the difference. It would be such a chore for me to carry around a bunch of equipment to just wait for that, like, oh, look at that. That's kind of neat. You know, I'll take a picture. But, as photographers, like, they always just have all their stuff ready, and they're just like attuned to how everything looks all the time. The other day I was at a soccer game, and we're all watching the game and everything, and somebody kind of pointed up and they were like, oh, look at that. And there were 5 planes flying in a V formation. It was a cloudy day, so it was just tons of, like, rolling kind of different shaped clouds, and there were five planes flying in a V formation directly above us. And it was just like one of those moments. I'm like, that's the shot right there. And so I grabbed my phone, looked up, framed it as they're passing over, and shot that one picture just for me, you know, not for anybody else. But that's the moment when I see something and I'm like, oh, that's cool. But I would never go looking. I would never go on like a walk like you do, go on a walk looking for, you know, a cool image. It's just not how I do it. Let me show you this picture. And it's nothing special.
Oh, yeah. Looks like
but just the fact that's pretty, you know.
They're in perfect formation.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. And they're like, they look like old school. I mean, they might just be Cessnas or something, but they look really old school. They look like biplanes, but you're looking directly up at them. So anyway, never mind. That's the picture I took. But
I found it kind of ironic that, you know, the phone is the thing for me that is very distracting. Like I'm constantly looking at it and I've been trying to get away from that. But for this trip, I use the phone as a way to keep me from being distracted with camera equipment.
Huh.
So I went the opposite route. And it really is a photographer's dream there. Like I wish, so I like going into things without doing a lot of research. Like I knew there'd be geysers and hot springs. I didn't know anything about geysers and hot springs, and now I know a ton, but I didn't look at photos or anything. And when I, like when I go see a movie, I really, the best experience is when I don't watch a preview and I don't know what the movie's about. I just go in completely blind. This, I kind of wish I would have looked at some professional photos before going, because I took photos of very iconic things. And then when you know, you're there and you're flipping through professional photography books, you're like, that was the angle. I wish I would have knew about that angle. Like, you know, borrowing other people's artistic views for my own personal archive.
Do you think it's a place you would go back to, like with the intent of a photography trip?
It would be worth going back to, but we would never go back because there's so many other places that we would rather see that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're kind of the same way on that. Like, I'd love to go back to some places, but it's a big world.
It is a very big world. Yeah. Yeah. I could go back and I could take, I would know exactly which lens to take. I would know exactly which camera to take, and I would be a little more analytical and clinical about the photography. I would nail it next time, but we would never go back.
Oh, you never know. I mean, like my parents went a few years ago. I mean, they're retired, and it's been, I don't know, maybe 10 years. But they drove out west, and they're not big travel people. They listen to this, so they're going to hear me saying this. They travel, like they always come to see us when we lived different places and stuff. But I don't think they really necessarily enjoy long trips in the car. It's just part of getting places. But they decided to go out west. And it was like a couple of weeks or something, and they drove intentionally to all these places and stopped and spent time to see these different places. And even though the driving of it was not the fun part, getting to see all of these places along the road out there, I think it was pretty special for them and pretty different for the type of travel that they had done in the past with us as kids and everything. So you may find yourself in a few years like, hey, let's take a couple of weeks and just drive to these places, you know, with a different intent than let's take a long weekend to go see the thing. You know, maybe you make it a part of a longer excursion or something. Jenny and I have talked about that maybe in the future when the kids are all gone, you know, doing a few weeks of driving without a schedule. And
I've done it quite a bit. You know, it's a lot of fun. I've been to Yellowstone 2 times, both times on schedule. It's like, oh, we're near Yellowstone. Let's go check it out. So we made it a thing, yeah. It's
cool. We went I'm from never all close to there, unscheduled.
Just driving out, because I drove out west a bunch of different times in my life. And last time I was in Yellowstone, we started at the bottom, I think in Grand Teton, and then drove all the way up through and came out the top. And it's incredible. It's just insane. There's people everywhere taking pictures. And there's a great Instagram, maybe this could be my recommendation, I'll find it. Torons, it's like morons and torons. combination of morons and tourists. I forget the name. Okay. And it just shows people inside most of the time Yellowstone, too close to
an elk
or too close to a bear, trying to take a picture, a selfie, and in many cases they get too injured.
Yeah, a couple little stories, like nothing bad happened, but when you're in the hot springs part, some of the water, the little bodies of water, some are, you know, 90 degrees. Some are above boiling, and you have to stay on and the ground can be very hot and unpredictable. Like bison have fallen into hot springs and died because they are just, they're very hot. And it is advised that you stay on the boardwalk and not on the ground because you don't know what the temperature is. But there are people, we saw people touching the water. They want to touch the water. And then there's a weird bacteria that grows in these waters because it's so warm and it's unlike any other place. And so that was one thing. Our little tourist guide, she was like, "You're going to see somebody today touching the water. Please don't do that." and we did. And then later on, we were in the van and there was a bear that crossed the street. And one lady was out of her vehicle and she ran up into where the trees were with the bear to take with her phone. And you just don't do that. Like, bears generally don't attack humans, but you still don't want to put yourself in a situation where you're running after a bear. It was so dumb. It was just ridiculous.
Wow. Man. I saw a thing the other day, and I don't know if it was real or not, because I didn't really look at it very far, but it was something about a guy at one of the parks over there had fallen into one of the hot springs and, like, dissolved. Not immediately, obviously, but before they could get him out. Like, he died immediately, mm-hmm. but then before they could remove his body, it, like, completely dissolved.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but it made me like, oh, I got to be careful if I ever go out there. It's, you know, another reason to not touch the water, I guess.
Don't touch the water.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm glad it was a good trip.
Yeah.
What are you? Oh my God.
It's a guy trying to pet a moose in the Taurons of Yellowstone Park. Oh. I said to you.
Taurons of Yellowstone. Okay.
That's Taurus plus morons. It says Taurus plus morons equals Tauron.
And it just shows man. People who I people have to share wildlife. This with my family. This is great. Oh, man. We did not see any moose while there, but I have seen moose in person when we were in Alaska like 10, 12 years ago. And they are just gigantic creatures. Like, you don't realize how big a moose is until you see one in person.
You could almost walk under it as a full grown human. Yeah. You could, like, step under its body.
Oh, there's no reason for them to be that big. It's just
and
ridiculous.
You have like a couple thousand pounds of meat and body on these four tiny spindly legs. They look like pencils.
Yeah. How does that work?
It's crazy. I seen when me and my sister were driving out west 30 years ago, and we saw one alongside the road. And we were like, oh, my God. So we got up really close to it, and we were just driving alongside it. It was walking in the side. I guess what would have been the bike lane. And then it must have maybe gotten threatened by us, and then it just immediately turned in front of us. And we were going 10 miles an hour, but we had a jam on the brakes. It was almost like he was, like, cut us off. And if he would have fell through the window, he would have crushed the whole roof. So we were in a small car. But seeing it up close, that was my exposure. Up close, scary.
Yeah.
We were able to, we didn't hit it, but it seemed like it was making an aggressive move towards us. It's like, don't come near me. It's like, keep your distance. It's kind of what he did. But he made a quick left turn right in front of the car. It was very scary. That was before iPhones, so I don't have a picture of it.
Yeah, that's when the camera was invented.
Yeah.
When iPhones came out. Well, Jimmy, what have you been doing this last week? A couple of weeks.
I'm jamming on the Woody. I could send you guys some pictures. The Woody's moving along. And this weekend I made a leather bag for a video, which is great. I sold it. As soon as the video went up, I got a couple emails. I sold it to the first person that wanted it, which is very cool. I'm going to bring it and ship it right after the pod. And I came up with a new design, just playing around with my leather links concept. And traveling, I was like, I should try to make a backpack, because I was carrying my bag with me when I was traveling. I was like, see if I could turn this concept into a backpack for part of the lineup. And so I did that video, and then I just constantly, every day, just like when I did boats in the past, every day I have to glue a little bit of wood to the project. So every day I'm out there with the woody. And I said it early on, and it still holds true. Everything I do dictates the next step. So I just keep adding more pieces, and like, oh, okay, logically I'll need to add this next. Logically I need to do that now. Logically I need to do that now. And so it's all moving in the right direction. But the big project this week, me and Derek and Paul Jackman, the three of us, are making Carolina Double H and Phantom Rider boots. It's all the same company. We're making boot go-karts. Jackman's doing kind of like a Timberland-style work boot. I'm doing a cowboy boot, and I think Derek's doing a different type of cowboy boot. I'm working off with Phantom Rider, which is a Double H subsidiary. Derek's doing a Double H boot, and Paul's doing a Carolina. So at the go-kart event July 12th this year, there's going to be three driving shoes. And instead of making this video all about making the go-kart from scratch, I opted to just go to Tractor Supply and buy one of those little green Jeeps that's outside, if you've ever gone to a Tractor Supply.
Oh, yeah.
Those little green Jeeps. It's a really hardy piece of equipment. And the one I bought was, it's been locked up outside my Tractor Supply for a couple of years. And it's withering away. All the bolts are rusty, and the green shell is faded.
So I went in.
I did. I asked for a discount because it's got bad gas in it. It's been sitting there, and the battery didn't work. They gave it to me for $300 off. Which was still, it was still $2,000, but in my mind, that's certainly $2,000 worth of time and energy spent that I don't have to. And it's a full, complete, really hardy three-speed with a reverse gear. It has this, it's like a little quad motor in it, this little quad. I was going to actually buy one of those motors on Amazon this year, and that was going to be my basis. It has it has three speeds, automatic clutch, starter. It's a great little motor for under $400. But instead, I bought the whole thing. This way, I just jumped right into making my shoe on top of it. And I don't know if it's a topic of discussion, but the idea of just jumping right in and getting started, because I was overthinking it. One thing that helped, obviously, was to do a Photoshop. So I took a picture of a boot, and I took a picture of this Jeep, and I overlaid them in Photoshop and to see what the scale would be. And once I got the scale, then I went out to the shop and I just went on the wall. I have a whole wall of material, and I just started throwing material down. And I was like, well, at least I got to make the perimeter. Let me just make the perimeter. So I made the perimeter and quarter inch rod. I have these 20-foot long quarter inch rods that were left over from a TV shoot. And so I started laying them on the ground and tack welding them together. And that gave me the framework. And then on top of that, I started gluing styrofoam. And but the insulation, and I started cutting it into long, thin strips on the table saw. So I've only used, did I show you guys the pictures? I showed you, but I only used up 3/4 of one sheet of 1-inch thick insulation, because what I'm doing is I'm cutting it into 3 inches wide, and then I'm splitting it in half on the bandsaw. So I have these 1/2-inch by 3-inch strips, and I'm kind of doing like almost like a basket weave.
Huh.
So I'll send you pictures. So right now it looks like a sandal from like a sexy Italian guy, but it's eventually going to get all covered with fiberglass and stuff. Looks like a sexy Italian tourist shoe. And then I got to make the upper, which is going to hinge back.
Oh, interesting. So you can get in and out of it and then like pull the tall part over you or what?
Yeah, that's the idea. We'll see.
Oh,
I'm not sure. Either that or I'm just going to have like 5 people pick up the shoe and put it back on top of
me. Oh my gosh, that's going to be huge.
It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. A couple weeks ago at a garage sale or a tent sale up here during Memorial Day, I got this big roll of fiberglass. And I had no idea. My buddy's sale. He's like, take it, fiberglass, because no one's going to buy that. You're the only person in the whole county that would know what to do with that. So I got this giant roll of fiberglass mesh that would be used for a boat. It's like a really hardy weave. So I might use that on the whole thing. I'm just afraid that I'm going to start adding too much weight.
You could put a zip up the back of it, so you could like a giant zipper, and you could unzip it and step in from the back, and then have somebody zip it up behind you.
We'll see. Well, my plan is to, and I'm going to send you guys another picture.
Their boots don't have zippers on.
You can see here, I have this thin steel frame, and this thin steel frame, if you zoom in, you'll see how it just hooks on this whole entire body. So once the boot is done being built, I could just two people could pick the whole boot completely off of the car. So I didn't want it to be dedicated. I didn't want this big giant boot with a go-kart attached inside of it rotting away in the corner of my property, which is ultimately what's going to happen. I mean, let's be real here. So I'd rather have just the boot with no go-kart under it rotting away in the corner of the property. What most likely will happen is I'll send it to Carolina without the go-kart under it. This is, it turned out to be a real fun build.
That's fun. Yeah. That's cool.
So look for images. Derek has been fixing up his go-kart in preparation to put his shoe on it. He has a different build method. And then Paul and I were texting last night. He's like, how are you building your thing? And I sent him a picture of my thing. He's like, okay, I got it. So
cool.
We'll see. When you have to create a giant volume, that's the holdup. It's like the more you don't want to build it out of wood, right? Because it's going to be too heavy. And so I just started weaving these strips of thin insulation together. By the way, my Harvey bandsaw. I got this new Harvey bandsaw, the new intelligent bandsaw. I brought it here. Now it's next to the Cadillac because I'm cutting and veneering lots of different parts of the Cadillac. So I got brand new blades on my planer. So I'm taking chunks of wood, I'm veneering them right on the Harvey bandsaw, going right to the planer, planing them and then gluing them on the car. And so that's why I was able to also use the Harvey bandsaw to rip long, thin strips of the insulation to get it nice and flexible.
Hmm.
Yeah. So thank you, Harvey.
Hmm.
Cool.
I need a Harvey bandsaw. My Laguna's still not working.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Something happened when we were working on the shop. And
does it not turn on at all?
Just does not turn on. I'm assuming I haven't had a chance to really look at it. I've kind of played around with it, but I haven't.
Does it have safety switches like when the door?
Yeah, it's got a foot brake on there. And I'm assuming it has something to do with that. I just haven't had a chance to
remind me. I'll tell you guys a story in the after show.
Is it plugged in?
It is plugged in. It's a 220 outlet machine, and hopefully it's something simple because it's a big heavy $2,000 machine.
Mm. Well, remind me afterwards. I'll tell you a story that happened to me. But okay. I'll tell this is a story for public. A couple years ago, 7-10 years ago, I had my first full spectrum laser that they sent me, and it's something with an M. It's like a tabletop laser. I forget what it's called. And I opened it up, got it all prepped, and I couldn't get it to cut. It wasn't working. And I was getting frustrated, and I called customer service, and she's walking me through the whole thing, and she's like this, and she's like that, and she's like this, and she's like that, and I'm like, I don't know why it's not cutting. It just has a red line. It just does not cut. It's just, and I was getting mad because I was so frustrated because it was like technology that I wasn't interested in learning at the time. And then she casually says, the door is closed, right? The top is closed. And I was so embarrassed because the door was never closed. It never closed. I'm trying to cut the whole time with the lid open. I didn't know any better. And I went, well, yeah, I don't, you know what? I have to take another call. Let me go figure this out.
I'll just open it and close it again.
I didn't tell her the door was open the whole time, and that was the reason why it wasn't starting. It was just, you know, when you go to cut and it just makes the red dot, it doesn't actually cut.
Yeah.
And she's going, like, it was like the end of the really long tirade of me being annoyed. She's like, well, I don't know what to tell you. Like, is it plugged in? Is the door closed? I was like, bing, 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 the door's not closed. But I didn't tell her that. I was like, you know what? I'll figure this out on my own. I closed the door and it worked perfect. I forgot that you have to close the door for these things to work.
Mm. Yeah. Well, now she knows because she probably listens to this.
Of course.
I think they're out of business.
You're exposed.
I think they are. I don't know. I haven't heard from anybody there.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, let's see. Last week, I made some doors, and I kind of showed you guys these doors, I think. we have, there's two rooms in our house that we have not renovated. We've done pretty much the rest of the house, but the, this like formal dining room and formal living room that we don't use formally, but that's what they were originally. And our piano is in one of the rooms, and all of us play piano, so there's always somebody on the piano, and the piano is loud, and so it just like goes through the house. So we've been talking for a while about closing in that room and putting some sliding doors or folding doors or something. There's doors on one side of it. We have been talking about putting them on the other side so that it can be closed off and become a little bit more of an intentional music room. And so we have some plans for building some shelves and stuff in there and kind of, you know, just changing the room up to make it more of like a, like a library music room kind of focused thing. And so the first step of that is building these doors. And I decided to do pocket doors, but not really in the wall. So they're sliding doors. And I'm building them up against a wall, and then I'm going to build cabinetry in front of them to close them in and hide them, you know, so they'll become pocket doors. But right now they're just sliding doors on top of this wall. And so I found a company that made, you can get a lot of companies make sliding door tracks where you can have two doors that slide separately. And I had ordered some tracks, and then I found, I started thinking, well, how could I go about making them synchronized so that when you move one, the other door moves too, right? So you have them automatically open left and right.
That's cool.
And I start thinking about this, and I start going down the path of like figuring out, well, you know, if you attach a cable here and you run it around a thing and you whatever.
I was on a job once with we were doing a scenics, and I was a stagehand on the scenic job for this like off Broadway show, and there was a lot of old stagehand guys there, and they, one guy taught me, and I'd have to play with it to remember, a way so that when you do that, so when you're off stage, you pull one side of the screen, the other side goes with it. So there is a mechanism. So
yeah, well, so I started thinking through this, and I'm like, yeah, I, you know, I got 10 minutes into the plan and the 3D model and the, I can make the thing. And I was like, this has got to be done already. So I looked it up, $50. Oh. $50 for a kit. And I'm like, all right. So I ended up canceling the tracks that I had and got the tracks and the kit the same price plus $50, you know, from this company. And it showed up and it worked great. And so that was an easy way to make that whole thing work really well. And the kit I ended up getting could hold, each one of the doors, I think, could be up to like 300 pounds or something. It was a significant weight increase, which is important because I made them mostly out of MDF, which sounds dumb. Maybe it is. But it worked, and there was a reason for it, because basically if I'd tried to make it out of, you know, like dimensional lumber, I would have had to get 2x6s and cut them down just slightly bigger than 2x4s to adjust.
These doors are really beautiful. I'm looking back at them.
Well, thanks. There are lots of glass and... Whoa, my device just bonged for some reason. So there's 10 glass panels in each one of these two doors. And I don't want to give it away. But I ended up coming up with a way to mount these glass panels in these doors made out of MDF strips, and it worked out perfectly. It felt really stupid going into it. I'm like, man, this is not going to work, and people are going to give me a really hard time in the comment. But then it worked super well. So,
can I ask you, are they individual pieces, or are they one side and now the whole other side?
One side, the whole other side. You mean the thingy that I'm not talking about?
Yeah, is this a joint, or is that just a line? It's like
that. Is this an individual piece, or is this whole part an individual piece? No, both sides are one piece.
Okay.
I'll just go ahead and say it.
No.
Okay, so 10 windows per door, 20 windows. I wanted each one of these to, they need to have a trim around them to hold them in place. So the doors that I was kind of matching.
The window panes have to be held in place.
Yeah. So I started, like, I bought some trim that wasn't the same as the other door, but I was like, well, this is close enough. And then I started thinking about 20 windows. Each one has 4 pieces of trim around it. Each one of those has 2 miters. That's 160 miter cuts.
Mm-hmm.
plus a slot down the middle of each one of those AD pieces to hold the glass. And all the miter cuts have to be right. The links have to be perfect for me to be able to do this. Or I could 3D model the trim and 3D print all of the trim, and it worked perfectly.
3D print in a square, so it's a square frame.
No. Well, no. Yeah, I mean, it's four pieces.
Four pieces.
Yeah, so I print two long pieces and two short pieces.
Oh, okay. They have
the groove down the middle of them that fits the glass perfectly so the glass doesn't rattle.
I see.
They have a perfect miter on the end. And I spent time making the openings in the door. Like, I used a template so that each opening is exactly the same size. So then I cut all the glass by hand and put these frames, like, just pushed them onto the glass, dropped them down into the hole, and they worked perfectly. Nice. And then I just silicone caulked both sides of it so that it's removable in case I break a piece of glass in the future.
Right. So. Are the those pieces of trim, are they longer than a normal 3D printer? Did you have to use one of the gigantic ones?
I did use one of the big ones. Yeah, I think the longest one is 12 inches. So that would probably be bigger than a normal printer. But you could also do it in pieces. You know, you could do shorter pieces and just, like, glue them, you know, or something. You could come up with another way to do that. And it did take a while to print because there were so many. I had multiple printers going and, you know, overnight and stuff. And so it was a lot of time, but, I mean, it was time I was doing other stuff. In fact, I make the point in the video that, like, this thing took 8 hours, but I was asleep. So who cares, you know? But it's funny because it just felt like when I was talking about it in the video, it felt like one of those things where people with 3D printers will just use the 3D printer when they really don't need to. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, it would take less time to just cut it out of wood. But in this case, absolutely not. It felt like that, but then once I got them all done and I was able to just drop these little windows into place, and they were all the same and they all fit, and, like, they were already white, so they kind of have, like, a primed color to them, and I just had to paint over them. Like, I don't know. I think it's something that people will do from now on once they see it. I mean, I know I would. If I ever had to do anything like this again, this is the route I would take. So
I don't even with 3D printers, I don't even know that would have occurred to me. Because I find myself so many times, like, we were filming yesterday, and I was installing drawers, and I used a technique where I cut a piece of scrap, and I start with the top drawer slide, and I use that to kind of hold the slide in, and then for the next slide, I cut that scrap down and then work my way down. And I was having trouble, like, and we're trying to work without a shop. So we're doing everything outside, and I was like, this piece of scrap kept falling, and I'm like trying to figure out a way to, like, I'm putting a rock up against it so to hold it in place. And my brother's like, just put a spring clamp on there. And I was like, oh yeah, that's like the simplest way. The easiest way doesn't always occur to me because I'm stuck in this little bubble.
Interesting.
And
it's easy for all of us to get kind of, like, zoomed in too far, and, you know,
yeah. So I never would have thought to 3D print them, which is a great idea.
Well, I think it came because I was looking down the barrel of all of those miter cuts and all of that, like, precision. Like, man, I am not good enough at this to get this right.
I really like the idea of surrounding the glass and then slipping it into the hole. Everything stays together. You just need a little bit of glue to keep it in place. I like that idea.
Yeah. It worked well, and the doors are now in place, and I'm about to start on the cabinetry in front of it, and so that's kind of the next.
So the mechanism for the doors opening up is all working, and that part's done?
Yeah.
That's got to be satisfying.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I still have some things to figure out as far as, like, there's no hard stops on when they open. So when they go out towards the walls, the hard stop is the wall, which is fine. And then when they close or come together, the hard stop is the other door. But that's pretty jarring if there's no soft closed kind of mechanism and there's no buffer there. So you got to be really careful when you pull them together. And with kids coming in and out of there, it I don't think it's fair for me to just assume that they're always going to be good about, like, you know, pulling them together and making sure they don't slam. And, you know,
oh, yeah.
So I've got to figure out some sort of a little tiny felt pad at the top and bottom or something to kind of.
Leather's always a good solution.
That's yeah.
Like a stopper. Yeah, I stamp out circles and use leather as like legs of tables and stuff.
We used to have this camera slider that used a big, heavy flywheel, so it would have like an ease in and ease out as you're moving the camera on the slider. This is different than the stop, but it would have a nice, like, it slows down at the end, or when you start pushing it, it has a nice slow and then eases into the speed.
Sounds like an electronic solution, Bob.
Oh yeah,
I might have to think about that. I already need to move on to the thing that's going to cover all of this stuff.
But, you know. What's the thing when you're in the bodysuit, the zip line? Isn't there some sort of like springy?
Oh, yeah.
Like, when it hits the end?
Yeah. There's a spring that compresses. So as you go in, but then, yeah, that might be something. I'll have to think about this. Okay. But yeah, anyway, so that's what I've been working on, is getting those doors in place. And our pool is finished, finally. So
nice, congrats.
Been in the pool a little bit, which is nice. And it's crazy. So pool's done. The last day that they were really doing work out there, they came and they like graded. So we have a hill that comes from one side of the yard down to the pool. Then there's the pool. And then on the other side of the pool, there's a hill that goes down to my neighbor's house, right? So it's like two opposing hills. They came and they graded, they brought in fill dirt, and they got it all nice and smooth and everything. And then the next day we had like 80 million gallons of rain.
Yeah, it's been raining nonstop in this world.
Just destroyed their nice grading. And then the next day we had about 70 million gallons of rain. And so it was just, I mean, it's all in my driveway. All of it just washed down, and, you know, we're trying to get sod delivered, and they can't cut the sod because the ground's too wet, but they can't, you know, it's a mess. So we can't let our dogs in the backyard because there's so much dirt that it would just all end up in the pool. And, in fact, it did end up in the pool. So as it's running down the top hill, they built in drainage and everything, but it was so much water that it couldn't drained through the drainage tiles around the pool, and so it just built up and came over the deck of the pool into the pool. And it's not just rainwater, it's like red clay rainwater. And we have a cover on the pool, so it ended up on the cover. But it was kind of disheartening. Like the first day the pool's really open, you know, you go out there and the entire cover is just covered in mud.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to spend a long time just out there scooping mud off the cover and like rinsing it. And we have a sump pump thing that you put on the cover that draws the water out and pushes it somewhere else. And so, you know, ownership of a new thing is a lot of work. Once we get sod, it'll be fine, but I'm just waiting on, them to be able to cut it and deliver it. And then I have to lay it. I've run into this a lot lately where, and in fact, the last video I did, it was the premise of the video, was that I get stuck on so many things. There are so many things that I want to do or I need to do that are then pending because of something out of my control or something, you know. But right now, like with the backyard, it's like I can't get sod because it's so wet, but I need to put sod down to stop it from eroding. But I also have to still dig a trench on one side of the thing to lay a gas line. And when I do that, I have to wait for the rental place to have the thing I need to go dig the trench. And then once the trench is dug, I have to wait on the gas company to lay the line and do a pressure test and then have the city approve it before I can fill that in, before I can even put sod on it. You know, it's just like I can do one little thing, but then I have to wait on all these other parts. That's how construction is. I mean, I know that. But in the last video, the whole premise was I'm stuck on all of the things. All of the projects that I was wanting to do have some thing out of my control that is like a block for them. And it was weird a couple of weeks ago to be at a point where like, I can't do any of these things. I don't know. Usually there's something I can move ahead on and everything else just has to wait in line. And But I found myself in a place where I just, okay, I couldn't do any of them. So I had to come up with another idea. That was not something I really needed, but so I kind of flipped it around. Anyway, but I'm still at that point where, you know, in the backyard, I have this laundry list of things to do that are manual labor and expense and all this stuff, but they're still all waiting on stuff out of my control to happen. You know, I'm not really sure how to handle that, how to improve it. I'd just be patient, but, I find myself in that position a lot. And I'm wondering how much of it is, I'm beginning to wonder if all of that is reality or if I'm starting to find reasons to make things in the way to avoid doing certain projects.
Yes, distractions.
Yeah, like I'm wondering how much of this stuff is actually in the way or how much I'm being like, well, you know, it's raining. That's you know
future,
what I mean?
Like that's a future topic. The distractions that we create for ourselves, either consciously or unconsciously. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think there's some of that that I'm trying to identify, but I think there's some of that more than I would have admitted in the past. So, but that's where I'm at right now with all of that stuff. I also have an interesting little thing. I have a question for you guys. So, a few weeks ago, I think I told you all about it. I had a friend ask me to make some giant pegboard walls. And they wanted me to take these are 1-inch dowels. And so I had to make 98 of these dowels, this size. And then a big 12x14 wall of, you know, holes that were, I think it was like every 10 inches or something, 8 inches, for these to go in. Right? So, and then there were 20 1x4 strips that went along another wall with the same size hole, different spacing. So a friend of mine needed this for a shop that they're setting up, and so I...
Is it a retail shop?
Yeah, it's like an art gallery kind of place. Mm-hmm. And so I bought a dowel from one of the big box stores, and I can't remember which one, but I bought a dowel, and I measured it, and then I laid it all out in Fusion. I took it to my friend Andy Bird and had him CNC these giant panels... all of this stuff. And we tested the fit. Like, he took the dowel and stuck it in the hole and was like, yeah, that's a nice fit. Cool. We're good. So I'd go deliver all this stuff. It's a construction site, so I just deliver this stuff to the guy, and it took him a couple weeks to put it in. Yesterday, they called me and they say, the dowels don't fit. Ooh. So I go down there, and sure enough, the dowels do not fit. The hole is like 0.98 or 96 or something like that, and the dowels are 1.019, just big enough to that they will not go in. So I spent yesterday going to all the stores here because I couldn't remember where I got the dowel. So I went to all the stores with a pair of calipers, and I went to the dowel aisle, and I measured the 1-inch dowels, and they were all exactly the same, but they were all different from the one that I bought that we measured.
Oh man!
So. This one anomaly dowel is smaller than everything else, and it's the one we use to drill these holes. So, the question, imagine you have 8,000 holes. I don't know what the number is. Imagine you have 8,000 holes that you need to make slightly bigger. They're already mounted on the wall. What do you do?
Make the dowels. It's easy to make the dowels. Then.
Is it? Because there's two ends of 98 dowels.
They're already done? They're already cut?
They're already cut.
They just have to be smaller? You put them in a lathe. Put them in a machine lathe. This way everything's fixtured and set up. Put it in. Put it in. Put it in. That'll take you half a day. Less than.
But you have to get all the way through all of them. Like you have to go end to end.
Yeah, you fixture it halfway, and then you come the other halfway, and then sand the joint. Because it'll be a little jumpy, but... When you first grab in a three-jaw chuck, you grab the piece. And then you come across... stop in the middle and flip it over. And technically speaking, you should be able to kind of line the passes up enough where if you sand them, they'll be indecipherable. Hmm. Passes won't always line up perfectly unless you do a four-jaw chuck and you do like this crazy machinist perfectionist stuff. But since it's wood, I think you'll have enough of a leeway where half the peg is going to be this way on the lathe and the other half you can marry it enough where you could sand the overlap and you won't notice it. But you do it on a machine lathe, even though it's wood. Do it on a machine lathe. This way you never have to change anything.
How long are the dowels?
About 8 inches.
Yeah, that's easy. Send them here. I'll do it.
You said it.
With the power feed, that'll go quick.
Too big to fit into a drill, a handheld drill.
Yeah, they're 1 inch. Yeah.
This reminds me. Here's what I was thinking. Years ago, Taylor made this lamp out of. She had one. She designed it, so she had different craftspeople make it. And one guy did these glass globes that fit over this other thing that somebody else made on the lathe. And none of the glass fit over the wood because it was just the. But it was like fractions of an inch. It was literally like 0.7 that had to come. They're fairly large. They were about 6 inches in diameter. So I put them all her wooden parts in the lathe one at a time and did exactly the same thing that we're just talking about and got everything to fit.
Does the whole dowel need to be shaved down or just the ends that go into the holes?
Just the ends.
Oh, and then you just make a jig for the table saw or the band saw.
Oh, there you go. That'll work too.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay. I thought you said the whole thing had to be just.
Well, I mean, I was assuming I would do the whole thing. Just
the looks.
Yeah. Because when you have one end inserted and the other end is sticking out, you're going to have like a step on the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you didn't do the whole thing. Here's the other thing I was thinking. I went and found this yesterday, which is a giant auger bit, but it's a 1-inch auger bit. But the thing about it is that it has a taper right here, which in my mind would help it center within the hole. So it only needs to take off.
It's against the law for you to bring that to the shop.
I see what you're thinking.
So if you get it in there and then just like
I would not go anywhere near that with that. What is the wood made out of, by the way?
It is birch plywood.
You're going to destroy every hole.
It's going to grab so hard. Yeah.
It's going to look like a bomb. That's one idea. Every hole.
This was my first idea and I got it as a backup. The other idea.
That also has to start spinning extremely fast to make a clean cut and then you're not going to be able to do that.
So the other thing is this. I came across this cone sander yesterday, and it's like a stepped bit, but it's wrapped in sandpaper.
You're going to need one individual one for every hole.
That's my worry is that this will go out really bad. Because it's like a 60 grit or something.
Yeah. And once it's in there, if it wobbles, forget it.
Well, it'll center itself. But I looked at stepped bits, because that would be a way to do it. But all the stepped bits are really kind of made for metal, and they're not going to do very well on that. So... I'll send you the dowels if you want to do that, but man, that sounds terrible.
Bob, you have a machine lathe, don't you have a...
I do. It just sounds terrible to me because it's like...
it's so easy. Set up, just do one sample one. Set it up, get your fixture so you know exactly where your cutting head is. And because it's wood, it'll take seconds. It's not like cutting metal. Yeah. Set up your power feed and just go, whoop, that's it. That's the easiest.
I don't know that the power feed works on mine, actually.
It works. You just don't know how to turn it on. It works. No,
well, all right, Mr. Smarty Pants.
No, for years I didn't know how to use mine either, and I was like, somebody said use your power feed, and just like the conversation we're having, I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, oh, you got to do this, and they got like a 2-second thing.
Yeah.
If you can't get the power feed to work, do a little FaceTime with me, and we'll get it going.
All right.
Those things never break.
I have a question about the power feed thing.
There's ways of turning them on and off.
Is there a way to like auto stop a power feed, like to set a point where it stops? Or do you have to manually
Yeah, if it's an old lathe, you'll crash it.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's easy enough to watch and do it. You just hit the lever and then watch it. And bigger lathes have what's more considered like a dead man thing, where you have to hold it. You can't just turn it on and walk away. The small lathes usually have ones where you can turn them on and walk away. You don't want to do that. But if you have a really long slow cut. Sometimes you turn it on and you start scrolling on your phone. You're waiting for it to be done, and then you got to go back.
Like they did in the olden days.
Yeah, exactly. Have you guys been seeing? That reminds me. Have you guys been seeing now with all this AI? There's all this like George Washington on the battlefield with his iPhone saying, "Hey guys, we're going to go in there. We'll tell you what happens after."
And then, I've seen a few things like that.
Moses going to talk to the Pharisees. Yeah. We're going to go see how this goes. We're not sure what's going to happen, but we'll let you guys know.
Because there's a whole series of biblical vlogs where it's like characters from the Bible doing like vlogs. I saw one the other day that was it was actually really good. It was Bigfoot doing an outdoor vlogging series of like being in the woods.
I've seen that too.
Man, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm, you know,
the lathe is the way to go. You've done your holes. They're perfect. They're precision. They're exactly 90 degrees. Don't mess with the holes. The dowels are the easiest thing to fix.
Fair enough.
Take that drill bit and throw it in the ocean. Don't put anything in.
I'll return it back to the store.
I know. That's like an $80 auger bit that you have there.
It was like $25, actually. Oh, it was really cheaper than a step bit, which is kind of crazy. Part of the reason why I got it is because a step bit that goes to 1 inch
was expensive.
Over $50.
They've always been expensive.
And this giant auger bit, this 7.5-inch auger bit, 1 inch, was $24 or something.
Is that at Lowe's? Is that where you got that?
This was at Home Depot.
Yeah, because the electricians use those a lot. I bought one of those recently.
All right, well, unfortunately, I'm glad I asked.
Yeah, no, just stay away from those holes. The holes are perfect.
Somebody might have a good suggestion that's listening. I can't think of any other quick way except
the machine, because the machine lathe is the only way you're going to have it done exactly every single way.
Yeah, exactly
the same. Once you dial in your cross feed, lock it, leave it, don't touch it. You just do your slide feed. And you take it out. And because it's wood, you could run everything. It's super fast and it doesn't matter.
Telling you. How long do you think it would take to do each one once you're set up?
Minutes. Not even a minute. I'm telling you, you'd be done in a couple hours.
Boo.
CNC the new board.
That would be too expensive. I mean, I did think about that, but it was like 6 sheets of 3/4-inch plywood.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money. You know, plus the time to pay. I paid to get it CNC.
Do you have a fourth axis? Andy must have a fourth axis. You could do this on the CNC machine.
I don't think he does.
Oh. CNC fourth axis is really slow. It's not. It doesn't work like the way you think it would work.
Yeah, like, but I'm saying if you're just using like a big. Like a clearing bit on the end of it, you could just stick it in and go, and it'll be done. You're not doing detail like with a fine nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the pegs for? The pegs that hold the artwork and objects?
It's a combination of things. So they will have things hanging from them, but they're also pegs for shelves to go across. Yeah. So I cut a bunch of plywood shelves and then routed this profile underneath it so that when the shelf sits on it, it has like a little, you know, cup that sits over the thing so it won't slide off. Which those will fit better if these are slightly smaller. So I guess that's not a bad thing, but it's just, it's a lot of work.
Sounds like it.
I was done with it. It was already paid.
Yeah.
But it's not right. So I got to fix it.
This is why I don't take on client work.
Yeah. It was worthwhile. Even fixing it, it's worthwhile.
We've been discussing of, I'm actually thinking about taking on some client work if I can find the high-end client who wants to do, like, crazy expensive stuff. So that's one thing we're looking into.
So the interesting about this thing is it's like that. That's the idea. This thing that I did is for a friend, but he owns a bunch of properties, and he helps businesses get started. Like, he buys property and then he invests in a local startup that wants to build something there, and he becomes an investor and part owner and he helps them get started. And that's the way he does this. And because of this, he's a part owner and owns a bunch of real estate, but he's a part owner in like restaurants and art galleries and, you know, little stores and all this type of stuff. So I met with one of his guys yesterday that runs these different like construction projects at all these different places. And oddly enough, our daughters are good friends, but we've never met. I'd never met the guy. And so I show up and I'm like asking what the problem is and trying to figure out how to fix it and everything. And he was like, "What do you do exactly?" And so I kind of told him, and he was like, "Oh, okay. Well, do you want more projects like this?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah. I mean, I don't want to build cabinets for places, but if you have some unique thing that you want built, like, that's kind of what I enjoy and what I would like to do." And he was like, "Oh, okay. All right. Well, now I've got your number and now I can keep you in mind." And so that was the good connection. And by fixing this and showing that I'm willing to do a custom project and correct little issues that were, you know, just an oversight, hopefully that will open the door for what you're talking about. More unique, interesting things that go in one place, and you know, that's the kind of stuff I would like to do. And I know it's for somebody that I already know. I know the types of things they do. I know how they pay, you know. So, yeah. So if you can find that, I think that like you'll probably enjoy doing that kind of work, I would imagine, because of the payoff.
I'll save it. Maybe I'll talk about it in the after show, but we have this. I say we, but Kelly and I have been discussing, but I had this idea on a way to try to get my foot in the door with the high-end clients. So, yeah.
Oh. Cool, cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got to find good interior designers, too. They'll always help you, recommend you.
If you're easy to work say that with, a lot, yeah.
They'll ask you to do everything. If you're easy to work with and you're not a pain in the ass, I'm not saying that you are, but in general, they always go like the path of least resistance. If they deal, because my interior designer would always be like, you know, this is why I know this, because she would say to me, can you do this? I'm like, I can handle whatever that weird material is. She's like, you know, because I have a guy that would do it, but he's such a pain in the ass. If you can handle it, I'm like, all right, sure. She's like, okay. Hmm. You know, that's also probably because I was cheaper too, but she wouldn't say that. She would just say, this guy's.
He's easy to deal with.
I would always just say yes. Like, you know, and then there's always the problem when you deal with interior design. You're like, is that the color we picked? I'm like, yeah, here's the sample with your signature on the back. I don't like it now that I see it all in the big giant thing. I'm like, okay, well, we could change the color. What color do you want it? And then like, let me live with it for a minute. So I never would push back. I would do that inside my head. I would go, oh, you don't like the color? Let's change it. Whatever color you want. And then they're like, oh, wait, that's too much. Don't push on me.
Maybe some people are just looking for a fight.
Yeah, and I would never fight with them. And then they would be like, okay, I guess it's okay.
Cool. Well, anything else going on? Worth talking about?
No. Still getting that shop together.
Hey, are you about done with it? Is it
about done with the redoing a lot of the furniture, the shop furniture, and I'm working on my very long miter saw station and finishing that up today or tomorrow. I don't think the video will be done in time for the weekend, but it might. And there's other pieces of shop furniture that I want to replace that I'm just going to do off camera, except there's a corner one that might be interesting enough. I told myself like 10 months ago, I'm like, I'm not going to do the shop stuff anymore. I want to stick with creative videos. But the shop stuff takes so long and usually does so well that, you know, I gotta pull back a little bit. And, you know, sometimes the people don't want to, I'm having a hard time trying to do the videos that I want to do. They're not the same videos that people want to watch. And I have to, you know, this is a business. I do have to stay afloat. So I'm not going to go back to making I bought every Timu item again. But I do need to think about what people want to watch.
Hmm. Yeah, that is a struggle. I mean, is the... I know this. You've already thought of this. I'm not trying to say that you haven't thought through this, but... Is the shop furniture, are you using the shop furniture as a utility that somebody else could build, or are you using it as a way to make an artistic piece of shop furniture?
I'm using it as it's total utility. So I'm calling this Tool Benches 2.0. It's a different design. It's a faster to put together design, and a much better design than I've done in the past. And basically this video, and the video is making a tool bench. You know, I'm going to give you all the information in the video, but if you want it in a plan, you can buy a plan, but all the information will be in the video if you want to go back and get all that. And then I'm showing, if you take two of these, you can actually turn it into a miter saw station by just bridging the gap and putting a miter saw on there. So like the bonus of the video is like, yeah, now not only am I building a tool bench, I'm building three of them, connecting them together, and then making it into a miter saw bench. You could do this too easily. So it's total utility. But the bench is actually nice enough where you could do this as kitchen cabinets. You know, it's got a toe kick. I forget what it's called, but the drawers are full width, so you don't see the frame. Everything is, you know, 1/8 inch gap between all the drawers. It's nice enough to be cabinetry. for your home. So, and it's one of those things, like there will be a, like a PDF plan for this particular size. If you're a Patreon member, you, I'll give you the Fusion 360 file and it's all parametric and you can punch in your own numbers on there. So, nice. You know, business wise, like things have been down for the last year. Cause I'm like, I'm going to take this artistic route and I'm just going to do what I want to do. Screw the algorithm, screw what people want to see. I'm going to do what I want to do. And I'm going to find this new audience. That hasn't happened as I planned. So I'm going to, people want to see shop furniture. All right, I'll give that to them.
Yeah. I mean, especially if it's something you have to do anyway.
Like, I have to do anyway. And it's not fun. And it's buying sheets of plywood is it's labor intensive because it's like big sheets of plywood. And you're moving stuff around. And my shop is, it looks big, but it's not big enough to work with big sheets of plywood. So we're working outside. We're also using all budget tools. So all like the Wend tools and Harbor Freight tools. Like the most expensive tool in this whole thing is the Wend track saw, which is like $130. That's nothing is more expensive than that. I now have, I get to experience the difference between luxury like Festool tools compared to Wend tools, and dust collection is not as good. The Wend tool, the Wend track saw, if you push it too fast, it just bogs down and stops. And it's not a battery, it's a plug-in one. And I'm like, oh, got to go a little bit slower. And it's just not as fun, but I think people want to see you people use basic cheap tools.
Hmm. Yeah. If I had $100,000 in tools, I could do that too.
Yeah. I get, you know, we all get the comments and some people are just being funny. Some people are being like absolutely serious. And yeah, we get those comments all the time.
Yep.
If I had $1,000 in tools, I could do that too. Is $1,000 too much? $1,000's more affordable. Right? Just thinking of a title for the, if I had $1,000,
oh, right.
I could do that too. Hmm. Yeah, just like an ironic title. If I had $300 worth of tools, I could do that too.
Must be nice.
Must be nice. Must
There's
be
a good nice. Title for you, yeah.
How about the guy? The guy that can afford it the most is the one that gets the free tools all the time. Is that 2 million followers, I think? I think there's an advertising glitch in there somewhere. It has nothing to do with me getting free things for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually... I'm workshopping titles, something along the lines of the best bench with the cheapest tools. Mm-hmm. And the ironic thing, somebody on my Discord pointed out, you're using the cheapest tools to make a miter saw bench for the most expensive miter saw that you can possibly get, which is the Festool one. But I'm not using that in the video. Yeah. It's funny. That's funny.
Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters. Mm-hmm. You guys can find something to recommend. big thanks to everybody over at Patreon that supports the show, makes it happen, really just supports us. Like, a lot of the people that support this show also help out at least one of us on Patreon, if not all of us, and that's amazing, and that's kind of like, you know, multiple ways to help all the different things that we do. Mm-hmm. We're grateful for all of those people, whether they help one or any or none or whatever. We are just grateful for the help and for the support, especially the top supporters, because they go above and beyond. And they go above and beyond here, and a lot of them support us individually, which is even more amazing. So big thanks to Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leathergood, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, The New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, Matthias Garnow, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. But also, people like, Sean in the Shed. He's on the list. So Sean is a friend of ours who lives in England. And last night, we were on a patron hangout with I Like to Make Stuff. And he's always on there. He's always on there, and it's the end of his day because he's in England. So he's always, like, barely awake. Last night, he was drinking coffee to stay awake to hang out with us. But Sean, I don't know if he wants me to tell you this or not. Sean just released an audiobook. He wrote a fiction novel and then had somebody do the audiobook for it, and it's on Audible now. So I don't know if he actually wanted me to tell anybody about this.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
You put all the effort. You want people to experience it.
So it. Oh, where's the name of the book? Annie's Watch. I think that's the name. Yeah, Annie's Watch. So Sean is a great guy. He's a big supporter of all of us. We've hung out with him in England and stuff. We've been over there. And if you like murder mystery type stuff, I haven't read it yet. He just sent it to me last night. But if you want to support another maker who's doing something creative, kind of outside of the making world, I mean, he wrote a book. That's a big deal. So go to Audible, look for Annie's Watch, and help him out. Help him get some traction on the book. I think it'd be cool. But Sean, thank you for the support here and on I Like to Make Stuff. I'm very grateful to have you around for so long. Do you guys have anything to recommend?
I'm going to recommend the Taurons of Yellowstone Park. You guys have seen it. It kind of goes along with Nature is Metal and that kind of stuff. You guys see Nature is Metal?
No.
What?
It's another Instagram feed. It just shows the types of things that they wouldn't ordinarily show on the Discovery Channel.
Gotcha.
Like animals eating each other and, you know, the type of Nature is Metal. That's basically it.
Oh, I got you. I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like vulgar stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's nature. So nature is metal.
All right. David, what you got?
I've got two. They're not related, but totally related. The one is it's Tom Sachs, and he's given a talk at IKEA about his personal journey with chairs. And, for whatever reason, graphic designers just have a fascination with chairs. Many graphic designers do. And as furniture makers, I think a lot of us love a nice chair. And so there's this beautiful history of chairs. And Tom Sachs goes through, he's an artist, and he goes through his, it's a talk that he's given at IKEA, which is great. And then related is, it's a CBS Mornings clip, and it's called Furniture Maker Presents Stories. And basically, Herman Miller and Noel are putting together, they're creating this archive of the history of chairs, and they're having some events. Eventually, this will be open to the public, but it's like you get to see all these like Herman Miller and Noel chairs, Eames chairs all together. Yeah. And, it's 3 hours away from me. I have to figure out how to get there and turn this into a video because I just love the look of classic old chairs. So
Cool.
All right. I got two. One is a video that I'm in, but it's not about me at all. And that's not why I'm pointing it out. So a couple weeks ago, I forgot to mention this on here, but a couple weeks ago, Joel Telling from the 3D Printing Nerd was in Kentucky on the other side of the state, and he invited me to come over and help out for the day. Basically, he and Printed Solid, which is a U.S.-based part of Prusa, they make filament and sell Prusa printers and stuff. I don't know how to – I'm going to start over. There's a school in eastern Kentucky. There's a teacher that was a math teacher, and he teaches the 3D printing class. He had a few Prusa printers, and he started a GoFundMe type thing to try to get some upgrade kits for his printers to make them faster. Okay.